Great. So I've got the privilege today of talking to you about wealth. So we're carrying on in our James series, and we're getting through it, actually, aren't we? We're looking at two chapters today within James, chapter 4, verses 13 to 17, and chapter 5, verses 1 to 6. I'm going to put the passages up so you can read them on the screens. Now, because we're talking about wealth, we're not just talking about wealth is a relative thing, isn't it? So it's a bit difficult to kind of get a bit of an accurate perspective on perhaps how rich or poor or whatever we are. But I don't think that really matters with this passage at all. And as we'll see, hopefully, as we go through it, it's all about our attitude towards money and material things. And that's really relevant, no matter how little or much we have. We're also not going to just be talking about monetary wealth too. I am going to kind of extend it into talking about our possessions and our time and our attention, because I think they're really key to this too. It is quite a heavy topic, and a lot of James, I mean, is anyone finding it quite challenging, James?
Yes.
Yeah, right, okay. Yeah, so this is no exception. And I think, just so we've got a little bit of light relief spread through it, every now and again I'm going to flash up a bit of an advert. And some of them you can kind of have a guess at what they might be advertising, and we can have a bit of a laugh at some of them as well. And the first one, I had a bit of a hoot at, because it's every day can be iconic. It's for TK Maxx. Every day can be iconic. Surely if every day is iconic, it's not iconic, is it? I don't know. Anyway, lovely. So, we get influences, don't we, by all these things, and we're just going to have a bit of a cynical laugh at some of them as we go along, but you know, they are there in the background, and they do suck us in sometimes. Okay. So let's get stuck straight in. So this is chapter 4, verse 13 to 17. Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go this to that, this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money. Why? You do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. But as it is, you boast and brag. All such boasting is evil. Anyone, then, who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it, sins. Wow. Okay. This is quite hard-hitting, isn't it? My mum read me a book when I was little, and it was the parable of the rich fool. And you can probably see what era this book stems from just by looking at the kind of psychedelic background of it. I think it was published in the 70s, but I love this book. It was great. And it's the story of a rich man, a rich farmer, who is preparing for his retirement, and he just stores up bigger and better grain stores for his harvests. But he doesn't think about anyone else, and he doesn't share his wealth with anyone. And sadly, before he can do anything with his riches, he dies. The story highlights the futility of just building up riches on earth. Happiness isn't found in accumulating lots of possessions. And it's really echoed in James's words about our lives just being fleeting, like a mist. So rather than seeking those worldly riches, we need to give our resources and our plans to God. Seek to do his will for our lives and be obedient to him and build up riches in heaven. Now, this comes from Matthew 6. Jesus is teaching Matthew 6, 19 to 21. So hold that thought about riches in heaven, because we're going to return to that. Now, I think goal setting in life and having plans is quite a good thing. In my professional role as an occupational therapist, I help people to goal set plans and things, and it helps motivate people and move to the next stage. And I am I do a bit of running, not like Phil, I'm not serious as he is, but I do try and do a bit of running, and I find if I don't have an event to aim for, I sort of slack on off a bit. I don't run as regularly, I don't push myself when I do run. I find, it's raining today, a bit of an excuse, I won't go, that sort of thing. So I need to have something to aim for. I need a goal. And that helps me in my running. James isn't saying here, don't have goals and plans. He's not talking about that. But he's saying just make sure that God is at the center of them. Because if we plan for life, if we plan for things and we don't include God in them, what are we saying? What are we doing? We're saying, actually, we know best. We think we're not trusting God. And in fact, we're kind of elevating ourselves to his level. And this whole passage is a warning against the temptation to put ourselves in the place of God. So, this is quite a meaty question. What would it mean for your life to put God at the center of all your plans? I don't think this is something that you can justly answer in a few minutes. I think if we're really honest, it could take days, weeks, months, quite a lot of soul searching. To ask, you know, what's driving us? Where are our impulses, these things coming from? And what's pulling us away from God? It'd be easy just to spend a few minutes on this and then return to the TV. You know, such deep examining of our heart is really uncomfortable at times. So my encouragement is don't, if you want to think about this question, don't rush it. Maybe spend some days, weeks considering it. It may come up again and again, and you just might remind yourself of it as you go through day-to-day business. Discuss it in small groups if you feel that's appropriate, or with a trusted friend. I've started to think about this for my life, and I realise that what's important, it's everything, really. It's this question is about everything. It's about how I start my day. But actually, probably for me, it's about how I end the previous day, because I'm a bit of a late-night TV watcher. I just find that helps me to wind down. But sometimes I'm there too late watching programmes, which means that it has a knock-on effect to the next day. And I've never been an early morning person, but as the older I get, I'm even less that kind of person. So I really should be going to bed at a more sensible time. So I think I just have, you know, if I do that, I just have less time. I don't give my day over to God as I should. I don't offer myself. I'm not available. I'm not aware of his promptings because I'm rushing around in the morning. It's not all about the big events and big decisions. I want God to be part of those as well. But actually, it's about the everyday. And last time, Phil, when he was talking about wisdom, was talking about becoming more Christ-like. And that's about my whole life. So maybe this question could be a chance to revisit some of the spiritual formations that we did a while back, because they were great practical suggestions in there. The fasting, the generosity, the Sabbath, prayer, solitude, some of those that we went through. Might be a chance to revisit some of those. And once we understand the plan, God's plan for our lives, and we're living by that, it's not just good enough to know what is wrong, but ignoring what we know to be right is equally as problematic, as James says. Anyone then who knows what the good he ought to do and doesn't do it sins. So to lie about something may be something we can easily condemn, but to know the truth and not say it may be something we might be tempted to justify a bit more. Or we might not directly speak evil of someone, but we might just try and, you know, avoid them at times because, that was a bit awkward. But actually, maybe they really need our friendship. So, next fairly big question. In what ways is God nudging you to do what is right? I don't know about you, but I don't want to ignore the nudges. And if I'm doing that, I'm probably elevating myself again to that place where God should be only. So I want to make sure I'm hearing God and that's where my attention is. And I think turning my attention to him is a good start for this. So far, we've talked about the importance of giving our plans to God and being obedient to that. Being obedient to what he's telling us to do rather than getting distracted by our own plans and desires and listening to those nudges. Right, time for another advert. Now, you can probably guess. Yeah, Tesco. Do you know the strap line that went with it? Anyone know? It's not a little thing. It's everything. Tesco. Okay. Right. So, moving on to our next bit, our next chapter in James. Now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming upon you. This is getting pretty heavy now. Your wealth has rotted and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay workmen who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered innocent men who were not opposing you. Okay. So James is not saying that rich people are worthless, but rather this love of riches is the problem. James takes his hoarding of money in the last days very seriously. Why? Well, because again, it shows that we're not prioritizing God. We're putting more importance on the accumulation of worldly things, worldly possessions. Now, we might read this passage and say, well, we've not failed to pay any workmen on time or other tradespeople, and we're not behind on our bills, or, you know. But actually, as consumers, which we all are, do we not have a responsibility to consider the conditions of the workers who make the products that we purchase? So the choices, what I buy, how I buy that really does matter. That cheap T-shirt, you know, is that helping to fuel an economy that is driving cheaper labour and treating people unfairly? Well, I'm just storing up my riches, thank you very much. So these are quite hard questions because they really get to how we live our lives, and they're not easy things and they're quite uncomfortable. So we might say, maybe I'm not one of those rich people. But here's the thing. My part-time wage in the NHS is in the top 1% to 5% of highest earnings in the world. That puts into perspective. And I ask the question, why doesn't it feel like that to me? Why doesn't it feel like I'm quite wealthy if that's the case? But I think my attention and my focus is probably drawn again to the pictures of fantastic lives that are bigger and better than mine. And that's never going to satisfy. So instead of being content with what I've got and stewarding what I have, I'm always looking for that bit more. So the problem isn't the wealth itself. The problem is how that has the potential to turn us away from God and distract us and shift our focus. And James's sort of sharp warning about this worthlessness of riches is really echoed in Jesus' teaching in Matthew 6, 19 to 21, which comes back to the treasures we were talking about earlier. Do not store up for yourself treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy. You see the similarity with the language there. And where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So, at the start, at the beginning, I asked you to sort of think about that treasures, storing up treasures, riches in heaven. We talked about putting God at the centre of our plans and listening to the nudges. And our response to these questions is really an indicator of where our hearts are. So if we're treasuring God's plans for our lives and we're obedient to what he's asking us to do rather than focusing on earthly things, then the rewards of seeing his kingdom grow, the everlasting things, the love, the connection, the reconciliation, the freedom, those lasting eternal rewards are gifted to us. Jesus said, you cannot serve money and God. It wasn't a commandment. It wasn't saying you shouldn't. You just simply can't. So, final question here. Where is your treasure? What are you valuing? What do you pay your attention to? What do you spend your time doing? And what are your priorities? Here we go. Anyone like a Coke? Open a bottle of Coke. Open happiness. Of course. How can we doubt that true happiness could be found in a bottle of fizzy brown coloured liquid? There we go. So to end, I just want to go over some practical steps, really, of things that you could consider, things that might help to draw your attention to God and perhaps away from worldly stuff. I mean, one way to do that is to kind of simplify life a bit. Now, I have shamelessly ripped this off John Mark Comer, who has some excellent tips, and I thought I'm not going to come up with my own because he's got some brilliant ones. So in his book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, which we did refer back to, I think, in the spiritual formations time that we spent on that, in the chapter on simplicity in there, he's got some great tips, so practical things. And we'll make sure I'll put these I'll make sure they go on the website as well so you can see them as well, because it might help. You might want to just pick a few out. So before you buy something, consider what is the true cost of that item. Think about whether you can afford it first, but how often you might be using it. And is it going to add value to your life or help you enjoy God and the world even more? And then, perhaps quite importantly, is this going to increase the pace of life or slow it down? And what might you need to do if life is really frenetic? You don't want to make it go faster. Think about whether it's oppressing the poor or harming the earth. There is a website. You do have to pay for it, but there may be others. And maybe, Colin and Mary, you might know more about this. Ethical Consumer. But Colin's giving a thumbs up. There we go. So it is a subscription service, I believe, but it's not a lot. It's £34 a year, something like that, isn't it? It's not a huge amount. But there are... So it's an alternative consumer organisation, and it helps people to shop ethically. But, there's considering buying reconditioned tech. There's secondhand things now. There's all sorts. He also says about being aware of impulse buying. So, I've got to have it. But actually, I do find that often disappears if you just leave it for a bit. If you exert a bit of self-control, it goes. He does suggest as well opting for fewer and better things. The world is always asking, how can I get more? But we could turn that around and say, well, how can I live with less? And share what you can. That can be problematic, but it's also a lovely thing to do. Getting to the habit of giving things away. Now, I won't embarrass the family by saying who this was, but recently friends that we know had a young homeless boy who turned up near their home, and he'd been wandering in the streets. He was only dressed in a dressing gown, and it was freezing cold night. They fed him, they gave him hot tea and sandwiches and a big coat to wear as well. And they were considering trying to get him into the night shelter. He wanted to go and see his friends, so he disappeared off. But they shared things with him, which was fantastic. Cultivate a deep appreciation for creation and simple pleasures. The older I get, the more I love a simple pleasure. We've got lots of lovely outdoor space in Basingstoke, which is all free. Lovely parks. We've got, you could enjoy the sunrise if you're an early bird, or the sunset. Go for an evening stroll, good conversation with a friend, the warm breeze on your face, a good coffee or tea in the morning. Simple pleasures. Recognising advertising for the propaganda that it is, as we've been doing as we've gone along here. It's a bit of fun calling out the lie sometimes. And finally, and I love this, lead a cheerful revolt against the spirit of materialism, living with less, more simply, and being joyful about it. Okay. So, just to summarise, these are three questions I'd really like you to think about if you can. What would it mean to put God at the centre of our plans? In what ways is God calling you or nudging you to do what is right? And where is your treasure? So I'm just going to finish in prayer. Lord, we just want to thank you that your kingdom is eternal. And we are sorry for where we've put our desires above those of yours, where our pride has led us to ignore your promptings, and we thought we know best. Help us to really figure out what putting you at the center of our plans really means for our lives. Help us to find ways to focus on what is important for your kingdom, so that the false promises of this world crumble and fade and lose their allure, and we can hold on to what's important and what you want for us and what you want for your kingdom. May we as a church speak up and act against greed and oppression. And no matter what our financial situation may be, help us to be people that live out through the means that we have the truth of your coming. In Jesus' name.